Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Ausperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
This is our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. Listen, Memorial Day weekend is right around the corner, and I'm excited for that. You should be excited, too. So make sure you make your plans today by going to GrandHotelCapeMay.com. And don't forget, mark your calendar for June 20th for our next live show at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. I want to play a clip for you. This is Secretary of State Marco Rubio. As we talk about China, and Marco Rubio is now going to be the NSA, the National Security Advisor to the president, until he formally nominates somebody who it probably will be Stephen Miller, the Deputy Chief of Staff. He's done a great job so far in that capacity, and he goes out and battles the media every day, and he loves it, and he just loves the fight. President trusts him. He's been with the president since 2016. I mean, I met him at Mar-a-Lago in March 2016. We were doing debate prep for that final Republican debate in Miami. So he's been with Trump since really the beginning, and the president appreciates that loyalty, as you can imagine. Rubio is doing the president said he's doing a great job. I think the key for Marco is that he's got a good way of explaining things without coming across, you know, like he's, I don't know, like overly MAGA or something like that. He's got an ability, because he ran against Trump at one point, to make a case from a different perspective, I think. So that serves Trump in a big way. You know, like when he goes on there and he explains that the American citizens were not deported. They chose to go with their mother. There's a certain element of people who maybe supported Rubio for president one time, or, you know, like him as a senator. And they hear him say that and they think that he's at least independent enough where they can believe what he's saying. I think he brings that quality to the administration. I'm not a huge fan of Rubio in the sense of his interventionist ideas, but he's really, you know, followed the president's vision in terms of keeping the U.S. out of war and trying to wrap up the ones that are going on. So I think that that's good. But here he is talking about China. Why it is we have to decouple from China and can't be so dependent upon them all the time. Cut number one.
Look, this is hurting the Chinese economy. People forget that the factories where all these shoes and shirts and clothing and all that stuff that comes from China, those are all Chinese jobs. When they say that the containers, that the factories are not going to be sending things to America, that means they're out of a job. This is hurting the Chinese economy badly. I think there's two questions. Can we reach some sort of short-term accommodation with them? That's what they want. I mean, the Chinese are reaching out. They want to meet. They want to talk. We've got people involved in that. Obviously, our Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, is involved in those efforts, and their talks will come up soon. But I think there's a broader question, and that is whether we shouldn't. This is a wake-up call that we truly need to become a country that can make more things in America and not be as dependent on China. We were far too dependent on China. We allowed them, through unfair trade practices, to de-industrialize us and to use not just tariffs but non-tariff barriers, currency manipulation, dumping. We've allowed them to use all of those things.
Intellectual property theft.
Stealing intellectual property, and really left us deindustrialized as a country and heavily dependent on them. That's a very dangerous place to be, and President Trump is taking it on, and he's doing it now because it needs to be done now. It cannot wait any longer. Two more years in this direction, and we are going to be in a lot of trouble, really dependent on China. So I do think there's this broader question about how much we should buy from them at all moving forward.
I think COVID should have been that wake-up call for us. I mean, honestly, really, I remember when Bill Clinton gave them most favored nation status, and he was not going to do so in the 90s because of their human rights record. And let's not forget that they imprisoned and torture a Muslim minority group known as the Uyghurs. Yet, you know, Disney filmed the live-action version of Mulan in China and thanked the people that are imprisoning the Uyghurs for their wonderful support. Let's face it, China is a big marketplace, particularly for these streaming companies, all of them, and they want their shows and their movies shown on Chinese screens. That's why during COVID, you had the corporate media cover up for them. Because let's face it, CBS, for example, is Paramount. NBC, Comcast. You've got ABC, which is Disney. And these streaming services and when they make content, when they show their content, you know, Comcast wants to make sure Wicked is shown in Chinese movie theaters. And they want to make sure that, you know, whatever crappy CBS drama that's streaming on Paramount Plus, they want to make sure that that's shown there as well. And don't get me wrong, Paramount Plus has a lot of good stuff. Like I'm a big fan of a lot of the stuff that Taylor Sheridan has done. I love Mobland. Oh my gosh, that show is incredible. You're not started watching Mobland yet. It's fantastic. But when COVID came out, you had the three big corporate media companies, ABC, CBS, and NBC, all covered for China. I still remember that famous interview with Margaret Brennan and the Chinese ambassador to the United States of America back in February of 2020. And he was saying it was racist to say COVID came from a lab. It's about money for them. It's always been about money. But that should have been the wake up call. COVID should have been the wake up call for the United States of America to say we are too invested, heavily invested in China. And maybe if Trump had been able to be president for a second term, maybe we would have done this decoupling from China then. The problem is that we can't trust them and they're not a democracy. So India, for example, as we talked about earlier with Dr. Coates, India is a democracy and their ideals and their visions much more align with ours than the Chinese ideals and visions align with ours, because China has a belief that they're supposed to be the country that rules the earth. And Xi Jinping believes that for himself. They believe that he's a deity. And, you know, I mean, it's a system. It's a very oppressive government. The way to get them to change, you know, it's like Rocky. It's the end of Rocky IV. You know, I came here and I didn't like use none either. I didn't like use none too much either. But if I can change, you can change. We all can change. The way to get China to change is economically. And right now they haven't had an incentive to change because they've been making a lot of money off of all these democracies around the world who wind up having their products built in China and then shipped to the rest of the world. So they haven't really had an incentive. And we have not, you know, as a country, we just turned a blind eye to the Uyghurs, for example. We just turned a blind eye to the forced abortions. We just turned a blind eye to those things. And you know, because we wanted cheap Nikes and we wanted to be able to have cheap iPhones and all the other things. There's a certain sense of, yeah, you want to be able to have products that are affordable and absolutely, but at what price when you consider the human rights violations or you consider the national security concerns or you consider the fact that they would be more than willing to take a virus in their lab, bring the military involved and weaponize it and then unleash it upon the United States military when they're there for the World Games. It's not a matter of I'm not advocating going to war with China. I'm not advocating that we don't do any business with China. Far the opposite. I'm just saying you can't be dependent upon China. That's stupid. That would be like in the 1980s being dependent upon the Soviet Union for critical infrastructure needs and critical technology. And yeah, imagine if the Whopper, the computer from War Games, was built in Moscow. But we've got stuff that we use for military purposes that's built in China. I mean, that's just stupid. So maybe what'll get them to the table finally is if they realize that the world is getting away from their economy and then they will have to change. I don't know. I mean, it seems like economics is a great motivator for countries to change. It's what led to the fall of the Soviet Union, what led to the fall of communism in general. I mean, Vietnam, for being a communist country, certainly does a lot of business with Western countries, and they're a great trading partner of the United States of America. ultimately, these deals have to be worked out in a way that benefits the United States and our allies in the long run, doesn't cause prices to skyrocket, because that would be disastrous economically. And China doesn't want to lose out on manufacturing completely. You know, they still want to be able to make things that are not critical to our national security, like sneakers and dolls and other things like that. So it forces them to come to the table. It forces them to come to the table. And, you know, people blasted Trump for saying that, well, maybe you'll only get $2 instead of 10 or 100 or whatever the comment was. But you can't expect him to go out there with a posture that sounds anything like he's willing to concede, because what incentive then does China have to come to the table and actually negotiate and change and make a deal that's fair and stop doing all the things that Rubio pointed out that China's doing? Doge, they had an interview last night with Jesse Waters. They exposed more wasteful spending. Your taxpayer dollars going to alpaca farming in Peru. That's right. Cut number two.
I think the Inter-American Foundation, IAF, is one of the agencies we visited where, you know, they get $50 million a year, congressional money, to give grants. These are things like, you know, alpaca farming in Peru, improving them.
That's a real example.
Yes, that's the real description. Improving the marketability of peas in Guatemala.
Really?
Fruit jam. And yes.
What?
Yeah. So you might expect, you know, in the private sector, a nonprofit to give, you know, 80 to 90% of their money to grantees. In the case of IAF, that was 58%. So the other half goes towards management, travel.
Yeah. What we're defined exactly, I mean, to as an example, is that even if you agreed with supporting alpaca farmers in Peru, well, actually, most of the money never made it out of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's going into the pockets of people in the neighborhood.
What percentage?
And they didn't even get to Peru.
Right. So what percentage do you think doesn't even get to the destination it's supposed to?
I believe the GAO estimates, so this is not our estimate, I believe it was on the order of only 10 to 15 cents on the dollar actually gets to the end recipient, whether you agree with that cause or not.
So they're just stealing the money before it even gets anywhere.
There's layers of stealing. So there's like the first layer of stealing, second layer of stealing, third layer of stealing. Contractor, subcontractor. It's like peeling an onion. And then maybe, and sometimes it's zero. Just flat. You get to the bottom of the onion. There's nothing there.
So maybe no one got a sex change in Guatemala.
It's possible that no one got a sex change in Guatemala.
That'd be a shame if no one got a sex change in Guatemala. That would be a damn shame. Doge also revealed that the Treasury was spending upwards of $5 trillion a year without a budget code on it. So nobody knew where the money was going. Again, from the interview, this is Elon Musk here. Cut number three.
Sir. A lot of great work at the Treasury this week. One of the crazy things at, with regards to the Treasury is that when a payment is made, and the computers at the Treasury actually pay about $5 trillion per year, like crazy amounts, there was formerly not a budget code on there. So if a payment was made, you didn't know actually what it was for. It could have been for anything.
Yeah.
There was a $4 billion COVID fund in the Department of Education. And there was no receipts required, so people could just draw down on it. And when people looked into it, this wasn't us, this was before us, they found that money was being used to rent out Caesar's Palace for parties, rent out stadiums, et cetera. And so the one change that Doge made with Department of Education is we had the simple requirement that if you draw down money, you must first upload a receipt. That was the only change that was made. You must upload your receipt. And upon doing so, nobody drew down any money anymore.
Yes, but we didn't say that we'd check the receipt. You could send a fake receipt. You could send a picture of your dog. Anything. But as soon as we asked for anything at all, suddenly the requests were like, oh, we don't need it anymore. Mm. Huh, that's interesting.
They were renting Caesar's Palace.
Yes. They were like basically partying on the taxpayer money.
Stadiums.
Yes.
Leasing stadiums. For what?
For parties, basically.
For parties.
Yes.
That's a big party.
It's a big party.
You'd think if you were stealing, you'd start small.
They do start small. But then what happens is over the years, so generally the fraud starts out small and they try to hide it.
But then year after year, if nobody stops the fraud, it gets more and more brazen. And every year it gets bigger until they're literally renting out stadiums.
$1 million to rent out a stadium?
Fraud in flagrante delicto, okay?
It's very obvious, you know, the bureaucracy loves nothing more than to just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the spending of Washington, you know, if you don't confiscate the money that's not spent, it's like one of the biggest things when I worked for Congressman Scott Garrett many years ago, he had this bill in which would say that any money that's not spent has to be sent back to the Treasury. And they fought it like, I mean, because that's the nature of government. They want to spend every dime that they're allocated. And if nobody pays attention to it, they actually will continue to get more money because they'll spend it and then they'll say they need more. It's kind of strange, right? You give, you know, X amount of dollars to this, and then they go through the appropriations process and they go, all right, so all that money's spent. So now we have to replace it. So the incentive there is to spend. And many times they want to spend that money because they're afraid that people will notice it's not being used and then they won't get more of it. So they find pet projects to spend the money on. And the minute you start to say any unused money will be taken back, they turn around and they spend it before you can even keep track of it. And you say to yourself, why? And the reason why is because there's always interest tied to Washington in some way, shape or form. There's always an interest tied to Washington. So if there's money available, they will have somebody who knows how to chase that money down and get it for their group, their NGO, whatever it is. And there are people who are paid for that purpose. So the money, you know, you hire a firm in Washington who will go in and say that there's these requests for proposals for money for this and that, and you present the proposals to them. And you know, there's no incentive for the bureaucrats in Washington not to spend it. They want to show that they've spent all this money and they've done these things to justify their jobs. If they return money to the taxpayers, the thinking goes, well, then people are going to say that the money should not be given back because you didn't use it all. And also we have to question whether some of these jobs should be there because, you know, you didn't use all the money that was spent. Becomes a real pain for anybody who wants to get to the bottom of wasteful spending, because they'll argue, well, it wasn't wasteful because we spent it on all these wonderful projects. So the incentive is always to spend. It's not to take a double look at something. That's why DOGE is so unique. It really is. It's why DOGE is so unique. This is a new concept. Let's look before we spend. Let's give money back to the Treasury versus just spending it just because it's there. Let's have a novel approach by saying that just because money's allocated for something doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea. And why do people hate it so much? Because there are jobs in Washington that are on the line for this, but there's also lobbyist money on the line for this. If people don't get the lucrative lobbying contracts to chase down the billions that are sent aside for research and something or other in darkest Peru and Paddington, that's less steak dinners at the Capitol Grill. That's kind of how the whole scam works, you know. President spoke to some graduates at the University of Alabama, and I appreciate the inspiration. I love a good commencement speech. I do. I love a good commencement address. They can be very inspiring and very powerful. So this is what he said to them regarding the future and doing great things and working hard. Very good advice for everybody. This is cut number 6 from Trump's address last night to the University of Alabama. Take a listen.
First, if you're here today and think that you're too young to do something great, let me tell you that you are wrong. You're not too young. You can have great success at a very young age. You're all very young. In America, with drive and ambition, young people can do anything. I was 28 when I took my first big gamble to develop a hotel in Midtown Manhattan, the Grand Hyatt, and it worked out incredibly well. But I was very young at the time. I was like a very young person in sort of an old person business. Steve Jobs was 21 when he founded Apple. Walt Disney was 21 when he founded Disney. James Madison, James Monroe, Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson. They were no older than 25 when they began the journeys that etched their names into the history books for all time. So to everyone here today, don't waste your youth. Go out and fight right from the beginning, from the day you leave this incredible university. Go out and fight, fight tough, fight fair, but go out and fight. You're going to be very successful because now is the time to work harder than you have ever worked before. Push yourself further than you have ever pushed yourself before. Find your limits and then smash through everything. Go and smash through. You've watched that football team smash through. You're going to do the same thing. You're at the age when you have the time and vitality to do really incredible things. If you give, just give it your all.
There's a lot of wisdom behind that in terms of taking risks when you're young. I remember I was listening to Jerry Seinfeld talking about doing stand-up when he was in his 20s, and he said everybody was concerned with making money, and his whole thing was, can I feed myself? So can I afford a loaf of bread and a jar of peanut butter, and can I afford my rent? That was his concern at the time. That was it. Obviously, as you get older, you have kids and you've got to provide for other people. That changes. But that's why taking risks at that age is so important. But what I really like about the president's thinking on that is the idea of risk taking. I like that. I really do. And I that message is so American. Take a risk. Try, start a business. Try the opportunity. You have a dream, go pursue it. It's uniquely American. It really is. You know, if you think about people that have started things after taking great risks, like, you know, my buddy Colby, he's a TV guy, right? So we were both waiters together in New York at one point. And he went out to Vegas at one point and he decided to do this show after driving by this pawn shop. And he decided to do this show, and he was out there for a buddy's bachelor party in Vegas, and he just had this crazy idea, and next thing you know, the show Pawn Stars was created. He saw me the other day in Fox News, and we were texting. We kind of lost touch for a little bit, but he's whenever I used to film for Mark Levin, he would listen to those shows. He's based in Austin. And he's coming up to New York next week, so we're going to try to get together. But he's pitching other shows and everything like this. But it's just a reminder of risk-taking and what you can achieve and what you can get. And a big part of it is, and I kind of got this out of reading Dana Perino's book, which is fantastic, by the way. I highly recommend it. She's got various passages in there. And Jimmy Failla actually wrote a passage about the risk-taking. And the biggest thing about it is that people who succeed in life have just kept going when others gave up. Like, there's a certain element to that, which is true. There's a lot of truth in that. When you try to pursue a dream or something, now there's financial realities of things, and businesses can go bankrupt. But I mean, Trump had, you know, four casinos go bankrupt. I mean, there's lots of different setbacks along the way. But ultimately, success comes down to people that keep going when others give up. So there's other people that, you know, take stand-up comedy, for example, that were on the circuit when Jerry Seinfeld was on the circuit and decided that they didn't want to take the risk anymore and went and got a quote unquote real job. Or in Jimmy Fallon's case, you know, decided that driving a cab or waiting tables or whatever wasn't worth it. And they decided to go do something else. There's an aspect of that too. There's no guarantee of success, but the fact that the president is encouraging people to go and try and take a leap and have a leap of faith and go chase it down is huge. It's great. It's something I want my kids to do in life. I really do. I want them to be able to feel confident that they can go out when they're young and don't have to support anybody other than themselves. And I like the idea behind that. If you could just afford to live, you don't have to worry about if your focus is making money and getting rich. That's OK. That's a pursuit in and of itself. And there's nothing wrong with that, certainly. You know, if you want to go work on Wall Street or you want to work at a hedge fund or something like that, there's nothing wrong with that. It's great. I have a lot of friends who did that. That was their dream. That was their pursuit. I have a buddy of mine, Mike. He's a member of Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, and the guy's worth a lot of money. And he always wanted to get into a hedge fund. That was his dream, you know. So, but the whole notion of taking a risk and trying and to have a president push that notion out there is, I think, very good. I really do. Because a lot of people play it safe. And it's not for everybody, just like college isn't for everybody. Taking risks isn't for everybody, but playing it safe isn't for everybody either. That's certainly for sure. And Trump being Trump, he also didn't waste any time to tell the graduates last night that to take a shot at Harvard, Matt DeSantis's college, Did you like that, DeSantis taking a shot at Harvard last night at your expense?
I've gotten used to it.
You can't ignore that, can you? This is cut number 7 from the commencement speech. Take a listen.
Graduates of the Alabama class of 2025 standing here before you in this magnificent arena, it is clear to see the next chapter of the American story will not be written by the Harvard Crimson. It will be written by you, the Crimson Tide.
Boom, look at that, taking a shot at you, DeSantis.
That's true.
I wish you had told me before I spent all that money on tuition and all the time gaining credits and graduating.
Well, you were the mascot, so you got to go for free, right?
No, I wasn't the mascot. I don't even think they have a mascot. I've never seen a Harvard mascot.
Oh, they should have a mascot.
They don't have one.
They should definitely have a mascot. Come on.
I'm telling you, they don't have one. I've never seen one at a sporting event.
A sporting event. You hear that?
Well, a basketball game.
Who the hell talks like that? A sporting event. You know who talks like that? Somebody went to Harvard. That's who.
I've been to a couple of the football games. Never saw a mascot.
Oh, by the way, speaking of sports, the president said we will always protect women's sports. Or sporting contests, as Matt DeSantis put it.
I said sporting events,
whatever he said. It's the president from the commencement address, cut number 8.
And I love sports, and I think I should have come here. Congratulations as well to the women's track and field team for winning 2 SEC titles this year. That's something. And as long as I'm president, we will always protect women's sports. Men will not play in women's sports.
Big applause from college kids. No, think about that. Think about that.
They say that's an 80-20 issue. No, it's a 97-3 issue, I think.
Yep.
No, men will not be playing in women's sports. I said that, and I classified it with a very powerful executive order, as you know. It's done. The class of 2020.
It's great. You think about, you got these college students there and graduates and parents and family. And when Trump said that, the place went wild. Shows you exactly where everybody is. And yeah, it's Alabama, but it's still college kids. And they agree. Men should not be playing in women's sports. Well, I mean, the college kids we've talked to over the years who've now become, obviously, graduates, but people like Paul Scanlon, for example. And that's exactly what I mean. Yet we had this idea from the left that everybody was on board with this idea of bio dudes playing in women's sports, which is utter nonsense, obviously. All right, as we continue along here in our 5 o'clock hour, it's great to have you with us. Don't forget Politics and Pints coming up. Why don't we give away a pair of tickets, shall we?
Let's
if you are caller number 12 right now at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. You will get a pair of tickets to Politics and Pints, Trump's first 100 days in office, Tuesday, May 6th at the Colonial Theater in Phoenixville, PA. Time is running out. Get your tickets to all the hosts of 1210 WPHE. We'll be on stage together for one special night. Your tickets today at 1210WPHE.com. It's going to be a great night. And don't forget to join me beforehand at the Great American Pub. Good luck to car number 12. We'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Bill, you're the winner. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. I've been dying to try to go catch up to you, man.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll see you Tuesday night. You going to come to the Great American Pub first?
We could possibly be there. I'll let you know when we see you in person.
All right. Well, you'll let me know if you're there, obviously.
Oh, for sure, buddy. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You got a great show. Man,
hey,
great show.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Congratulations. Good job.
All right. Have a good day.
You too, pal. Have a great weekend. 855-839-1210 is the number. Keep it handy because I think we might have another pair. Do we have another pair to give away or is that it?
No, we just had the one.
I thought we skipped a day.
Well,
we
did. And I asked if we could give away two today, but I was reprimanded and said we only get one pair. It's a hot ticket, I guess.
Oh, I guess so. Well, fine. Hey, who's Big Balls anyway?
We have a clip where the gentleman reveals his identity. If you'd like to hear from him,
yeah, this is part of the this is cue of cut number 5 here. This is the Jesse Waters asking. You remember the whole thing with the Doge team when it was Aaron Burnett, I believe, from CNN, who said, "Who's Big Balls?"
Was it Erin Burnett?
I believe it was Erin Burnett.
I think Kara Swisher was also another one that was... Yeah.
Like, big balls. So Jesse Waters asked that question, cut number five.
Who's big balls?
It's big. That should be obvious.
Why do they call you Big Balls?
I just said it as my LinkedIn username.
Okay.
Well, people on LinkedIn take themselves like super seriously, and they're pretty adverse to risk. And I was like, well, I want to be neither of those things. So I said it, and honestly, I didn't even think anyone would notice.
Yeah.
So what do you
LinkedIn
do?
Is so cringe.
What does Big Balls do?
Right now, I'm working on some payment computer stuff. So one of our initiatives is to root out fraud and waste. And to do that, we started looking at the payment computers. And as mentioned earlier, like, there is no accounting of what payments actually go to in the payment computer. So like, you look at a specific line item, like $20 million, and you're like, okay, well, what is this money going to? And for the majority of payment systems, it's like, well, we don't really know.
And they're like, what? That would be the response.
Is this the most basic responses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the most common response.
What do you say when people just say, I don't know?
Well, it's a huge cause for concern because, like, the upstream thing, which is distributing the money, literally has no checks and no accountability to the actual American taxpayer. So it's a huge vector for fraud, waste, and abuse.
Do these people not respect taxpayer money?
I mean, there's no incentive to if you work in the government. I think the incentives will always decide the outcomes.
Yes.
Do you guys feel like you're putting yourself at risk by doing this?
Let me jump in here for a second. I just want to let you know that kid is a 19-year-old college student and software developer. His name is Drew. I'm sorry. No, that's not his name. But his name is Korstein. Korstein is his name. And he, Edward Korstein, 19 years old, smart kid. I mean, Elon Musk has assembled this great team. They come together, people in business, young people that understand how to code, bro, how to do all that. And it's very, very smart. Now let's contrast that, shall we, with the great work of National Public Radio. So NPR, this is an actual audio piece, an opinion piece from National Public Radio, which the president today signed an executive order to gut funding for NPR and PBS. Now, ultimately, it will take an act of Congress, but good. Get rid of them. Good riddance. Stick a fork in them. They're done. There'll be lawsuits and they'll sue. And who cares? I want it to end. And the Congress wants it to end. And the president signing this executive order will then lead to Congress taking the funding out and dismantling the Corporation for Public Broadcasting vis-a-vis legislation. They'll put it as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill, and it will be the end of NPR and the end of PBS. And if you think that NPR should survive, I give you this. I give you cut number, 22.
The Tanner Dog shares your domicile. I'll venture a guess that you don't refer to the four-footed family member who licks your face, naps in your lap, sleeps on your bed, and inhales the redolence of your dirty socks as if they were saturated with rose petals, as it. You probably call them by a name and refer to them as he or she and various nicknames inspired by their personality and habits and, for that matter, yours. A group of more than 80 people with an interest in animal welfare, including Dr. Jane Goodall, have signed a letter calling on the editors of the Associated Press Style Book to change their guidance so that animals in news stories would be identified as she, her, hers, and he, him, his when their sex is known, regardless of species, and the gender-neutral they, or he, she, or his, hers, when their sex is unknown. News organizations, including this one, often follow the guidance of the
AI style. Let's stop for a second here, shall we? First of all, is that AI or is that a real human being talking?
That's a real human being.
That's a person? I don't believe it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe that. Nobody talks like that. Nobody sounds like that. That's not how people talk. Nobody sounds like that. That's not real.
It's soothing.
Soothing? Everybody's crashing their cars right now driving home. You should have warned us. Secondly, the cat has to be she, hers. What the hell is it? What is it? She, her, hers, is, I can't keep, back it, Sean, back it up like 30 seconds, please, so we can hear that again. I want to explain, I want to hear what a, she, her, hers, is that right? And he, his, hims? Did I get that correct? And then if they're gender neutral, it's they, them, theirs for a freaking pet? What if you, yeah. What if you cut the, you get the vasectomy, you chop the, well, the thing, it still is a schwanz, so it's still a guy. All right. Anyway, go ahead. Listen.
Various nicknames inspired by their personality and habits and, for that matter, yours. A group of more than 80 people with an interest in animal welfare, including Dr. Jane Goodall, have signed a letter calling on the editors of the Associated Press Style Book to change their guidance so that animals in news stories would be identified as she, her, hers, and he, him, his when their sex is known, regardless of species, and the gender-neutral they, or he, she, or his, hers, when their sex is unknown. News organizations, including this one, often follow the guidance of the AP style book. The signatories of this letter hope that when we write about animals in zoos, shelters, fields, farms, forests, seas, slaughterhouses, and
I wish I was in a slaughterhouse.
They are recognized as living beings who feel hunger, fear, happiness, and pain. It would mean writing sentences like, the rat was injected with virus, or the deer was struck by the car, and he, she, or they died, not it. The proposed change might seem difficult to imagine right now, but consider how the care we take with personal pronouns for humans has changed over the past several years.
Sorry, I fell asleep there.
Ben Dreyer, copy chief at Random.
By the way, do the animals have to put their pronouns in their signature line on an email? That's what I want to know. If a deer emails a sheep, does the deer sign it he, him, his, or they, them, theirs? I'm just curious. What about in their LinkedIn bio? Huh? Does a mouse put in his LinkedIn bio that it's he, him? That's what I want to know. That's the question.
I don't know if we're going to make it to the end of the clip because there's still a ways to go. And I think I speak for everyone when I say we've had enough. But the boring voice guide does say that it's sort of, or he hints that it might be offensive to refer to an animal as it.
Offensive to who? The animal that I'm eating? This chicken, he, him, tastes delicious with the Parmesan on it? Just kidding, I don't eat chicken parm. This veal, this succulent veal, delicious. Oh, I hope she, they, them had a great life. Mmm. Let me dunk it in some more oligarchy. Give me some more oligarchy to pour on my veal Parmesan or my veal salt and bocca. How's it? Try the veal. It's the best in the city. It is. They are the best. They, them is the best. What? They, them. What? The veal. We don't know the veal's gender, so it's they, them. Try the they, them. The best in the city. If you want the veal Parmesan, always get it bone on the bone and then pound it out nice and thin like that. And then he, him will taste extra crispy, all right? And then you put the sauce and the cheese. Put the sauce on top of the cheese. How many times do I have to tell you people this? The cheese will insulate from the sauce and it will not get soupy. And they, them will be delicious, enjoyed, wonderful, all right? What if the veal was identifying as something else, even though it had a penis? Can anybody answer that for me? We don't know what the veal's real gender was. I'm not a biologist. I'm certainly not a veterinarian. Fine. Listen, Dr. Mike Veneria, great guy, great friend, the master of dental implants. He is the best. I want you to go see him today. I know going to the dentist doesn't sound like fun, but you know what's less fun? Not being able to chew your food because you've lost a tooth or because you have some serious problems with your overall mouth health. That's why I want you to go see Dr. Mike, because for 10 years, 10 consecutive years, he's been named a master of dental implants among his peers in the region. And I would love for you to reach out to him. He's got two offices to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Dr. Mike is a great guy, great friend. And he's my dentist. He's my family's dentist. We all go see Dr. Mike for the great work that he does. VanariaDental.com, VanariaDental.com, VanariaDental.com. You'll love Dr. Mike. The people that work there, the great music playing in the office. And if you've had an estimate for complicated dental work, get a second opinion. It's always smart to do that. If you have a dentist close by, listen, Dr. Mike is worth the trip. He really is. He's the best at what he does. Get a free implant consultation today. But he also does, you know, he does dental implants. And hey, Tuna Fang, it's not gravy if it's just a marinara sauce. If it's just a pomodoro, it's not gravy. Gravy has to have meat in it. Why would you put a meat? Why would you put a meat gravy on top of a meat like veal? Why would you do that? Why would you do that? That would be redundant. Why would you do that? Huh? Huh? No, you know, you put basic plain tomato sauce on top of it. You don't even cook the sauce ahead of time. I'm talking plain pomodoro on top of the breaded veal, and then you put the mozzarella right on top of it. Because you don't want to overcook. If you cook a sauce first and then you put it on the veal, that sauce is going to burn in the oven. You don't do that. Have I taught you people nothing? Have I taught you people nothing? What if the gravy identifies as sauce? That's a great point. Great point. It has to have meat to be gravy. Otherwise, it's sauce. If you don't believe me, go to Italy and ask them. Nice pomodoro. And by the way, when I make my pizza, I don't cook the sauce ahead of time. Pizzerias should never do that. You're going to cook something. It's cooked. Now you're going to put it into a 700-degree oven? No. You're going to burn it. No. I'm sorry. Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. And if you ever burn the roof of your mouth by eating pizza that's too hot, Dr. Mike can't do anything for you. But just be careful. All right? Be careful, baby. We'll be right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Friday feeling, and I appreciate you being here today as we talk about all of the issues. We do have a local story to get to in the 6 o'clock hour about a woman who was arrested in Delco, a Delco woman who was arrested. We'll tell you what she did, and we'll play the audio clip for you from Fox 29. And brace yourselves for the earmuffs, kids. Plus, as we continue along the show here today, I'm going to play again, if you missed it earlier, we'll get into the audio recording of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, his wife begging a judge for a protective order. We're going to talk about that as well. You know, I'd be remiss if I did not mention that this particular time that we're living in right now of division, the most divided people are the Democrats. They really are. I mean, they are killing each other. It is a Democrat civil war out there. I'll tell you more about what I mean by that in the next hour. But when Bernie Sanders says we're not united, united on what? He's not wrong. What are they united on? And that's the real issue right there. That's the real truth. America is not as divided as you think. But among the Democrat Party, it is really absolutely a true civil war going on. We'll be right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.